Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you all hear me in there? Oh, the power of technology. Wow. Think about like a long time ago, you didn't have amplification outside. Time for a Dharma talk. 100 people show up. Did you have to yell? Really? Things change so much. We take so much for granted so rapidly. It's nice to be here with you all. I'm just going to let you know I have a bit of a cold, so I think I'm in good shape. But during tea time, rather than sort of hanging out and socializing, I'm just going to go up on top of the stairs here. If you want to come talk to me, that's a good place, but I don't want to be milling around and potentially giving people germs. So, so today I have this talk. I've entitled Boundless Heart. Boundless Heart. It's the line from the Metta Sutra. And later on, I'll give everyone the opportunity to chant the Metta Sutra together. But I'm going to begin to talk about what I think is the fundamental message of Buddhism, which is one of empowerment. There's suffering in the world, and you can do something about it. There's suffering in the world, and you can do something about it. All of us! Wow! Wow! And one of the great things about this empowerment is it's not about someone giving you power. It's a power that no one can give or take from you. The message is that you always have liberative capacity in every single moment, no matter where you are in your conditioning. And this message is repeated throughout the text of people who are extremely privileged. There are kings, there are queens, there are great merchants. And then there are also very low caste people and slaves and people who are profoundly traumatized who all demonstrate that they can manifest this capacity. So it's a power that's not given. It is inherent. And with this as the basis, and by saying there's suffering in the world and you could do something about it, I'm basically summing up, I would say that's the simplest summation of the Four Noble Truths that you can have. So then, if you begin to accept this, you think, well, maybe I do have liberative power every once in a while. You kind of feel like that's true. Then the question becomes learning how to use it. Learning how to use it, our capacity to alleviate suffering, to liberate people from suffering. And the thing is, when we talk about power, immediately we are conditioned to think about methods that are not very effective. Power is usually associated with controlling external phenomena, often with sort of like winning or dominating. And this power, the emphasis is on the power to do, the power to act. And there's an enormous emphasis throughout Buddhist texts. Well, it's like a stunning absence. Normally we would think power means I can make something else happen. But that is really, you don't see it almost at all in these texts. And that's really pretty radical and strange. If you actually investigate your experience and you think, when I'm doing things and I feel like I have agency, we're very conditioned to think that what that means is we can make something else happen outside of ourselves. But this body of teaching is just about, what do I do now that will be liberative? What's the action? What's the quality of the action? So, you know, in the Dhammapada, it says, all the effort must be made by you. Buddhas only show the way. Follow the path and practice meditation. And if you talk about this too long, it starts to feel very heavy. Oh my gosh, I'm just out here on my own. I got to liberate everybody. That sounds, you know, I mentioned this to a friend of mine. He is Jewish. And he's like, so what, you know, what's your tradition about? And I was talking about this. He said, oh, that's too much pressure. So the thing is, there isn't talk about responsibility. It's an opportunity. You can take the opportunity or you can choose not to. But our tradition encourages you to take the opportunity. So when we chant the Metta Sutra in a minute, the Metta Sutra will be about ways. It's one of the more practical texts on how can you do liberation. So that's why I'm leading into this talk, which is around metta, which means friendliness or loving kindness, boundless heartness from the perspective of empowerment. So this empowerment, like I say, if you only emphasize, you might think, oh, I'm sort of like alone in the universe with this capacity to do something. And that's not what we're talking about at all. Because on the other hand, within our tradition, everything arises interdependently. So everything about you, including your capacity for liberation and all your habits that are harmful, and everything else in the apparently external world, all just come together as they are. So simultaneously, in any moment, you have a capacity for liberation, but everything about how you're going to relate to it is just produced by other effects. So this is a paradox. There's no you that is a controller, and you have agency. This is a fundamental paradox of our tradition. And we can just dance with them, or see where one is useful. When you feel like, oh, I can't really do anything, you're just operating on autopilot. Empowerment. When you feel like I'm a wreck, I'm so bad at this, I don't know how to do anything, you can realize everything I am comes from infinite conditions. And when you see someone else and you think, they're beyond the pale, remember, everything about you and that relationship with them arises from infinite conditions. So we're studying the Avatamsaka Sutra in morning study group. And it's wonderful. And so for last week, I was like, just read it, and if a line pops out, you know, relate back what it was. So I hope I won't get in trouble when I mentioned that Anne, our Eno, was like, oh, I noticed this line. My mind is like an echo. Knowing my mind is like an echo, I am mindful. Knowing my mind is like an echo, I am mindful. So I'm echoing Anne. Echoing the Avatamsaka Sutra, which echoed through the minds of countless people. So knowing that your mind arises like an echo from infinite conditions, oh, I have liberative capacity. I'll be mindful. Instead of being like, it comes from infinite conditions, it's too big, I can't deal with it. I'm going to watch TV. At least be mindful of TV. So the idea here is not to just to let everything bounce around in the echo chamber, because this massive interdependence, although oftentimes we'll emphasize how wonderful it is, actually is producing enormous amounts of suffering. And that's the more early Buddhist view, samsara. Conditionality produces patterns of suffering. Everyone in this room, I'm pretty sure, suffers, and people throughout. And these patterns are personal, they're social, they're systemic, they're here. But we can do something. So the idea is not to just let all this stuff bounce around in this echo chamber, but know what it is. Really pay attention. Knowing my mind is like an echo, I am mindful. So we have agency within interdependence. So I came across a quotation by Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was a slave, and then he was an abolitionist. and an amazing writer and thinker with a very broad view of what liberation could be. And he once wrote, "Those who favor freedom but deprecate agitation want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the roar of its waters. The struggle may be a moral one or it may be a physical one, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will." So Frederick Douglass, people are saying, "Oh, could you just quiet down? You're pushing too hard. We'll get rid of slavery eventually." This may sound familiar. No, don't say it there. That's alienating people. So clearly, the issue he was talking about was a very big particular social issue. But it was beyond just abolishing slavery that he was talking about. He was talking about freedom in broader and broader terms for a wide variety of people. And I bring this up here because this statement that he makes has a deeper sort of philosophical resonance, I think, which is that given that we have samsara, that there's so much suffering, just not doing anything won't work. We'll continue to operate on autopilot. Our mind will just be an echo with no awareness of what's echoing. And as most of you probably have already noticed, if you really give yourself to this practice, sometimes it's like, ah, it's hard. You know, we have to actually make an effort to step in to acknowledging the challenge. So I'd just like to acknowledge right now, because I'm going to talk a little bit, very briefly, about Dr. Ford, who was just testifying before the Senate. And before I start, I just want to acknowledge that I suspect a lot of people have a lot of feelings about this. In particular, I'd like to acknowledge that many women and many victims of sexual violence or survivors of sexual violence have had strong, traumatic feelings come up in the last week. I also want to acknowledge that there may be some people who are like, I don't think this is appropriate for talking about during a Dharma talk. You may feel that way. So I just want to invite everyone to take a moment to, whatever feelings arise from what I've just said, to just be really present to how you feel. So just pause and know your own feeling. Not your thoughts so much, just how you feel. Okay. So then, I want to say this amazing thing that happened when Dr. Flair was testifying before the Senate. It was very contentious. I don't know if you watched it. It was like really, really, people are like, rah, on both sides. And at one point, someone asked her, you know, what do you want to see happen here? And she said, I just really wish that we could find a way to collaborate to create the best result. Wow! People are amazing. People are amazing. Bell Hooks wrote, Bell Hooks, so if you don't know Bell Hooks, she's a pioneering African-American feminist. She's a Buddhist, a student of Thich Nhat Hanh, an amazing and prolific writer. And if you've never read any, you know, the books may look daunting, just look up some interviews. There's an interview with her with Thich Nhat Hanh. It's really inspiring. She once wrote, "It is the most militant, most radical intervention anyone can make to not only speak of love, but to engage in the practice of love. For any time we do the work of love, we are doing the work of ending domination." The power that we're invited to use here is not one of dominating in external form, but of doing something liberative that's based in the broadest possible understanding we have of who could be liberated. And she, in this interview that I just read, she talks about she had studied Thich Nhat Hanh for years, used his material to inspire her writings in part, and she met him. And she's been years, so she's really, it's like, oh my God, Thich Nhat Hanh. But if you don't know who Thich Nhat Hanh is, he's like a very, very prominent Vietnamese monk. Once nominated for the Nobel Prize by Dr. King. Anyway, she goes to meet him, and she's like, I was just super angry. I'd been in this sangha, and I'd received like all these little racist microaggressions, and I was in a relationship, and I was just really pissed, and I was like, I felt terrible. I'm finally going to meet Thich Nhat Hanh, and I'm just like, ah! And she got there, and I'll do my best to quote it. Apparently, she said, I'm just really angry, which is cool, right? She's not like, oh, you know, I'm very spiritually, baby. No, she's real. She was real. That's liberative, to be real with other people. And he responded, oh, anger. Well, that's, you can use that for compost. For your garden of liberation. For growing something liberative. So, when we talk about universal love, you know, people think, oh, but it's like putting down anger. If you're angry, can you love yourself and take care of your anger? Do you love yourself enough to take care of it? And I really don't think it's impossible to do liberative things without being angry. I see many people work and pour their hearts into things. So if you're angry, it's cool. It's okay. But you can care about yourself. Anger is anger itself, a feeling. So, I would like to invite everybody, before we, so in a minute, I would like to invite people to chant the Metta Sutra together. I'll just say, I don't want to talk a lot about chanting. If you've never done it, try it, or don't. It's cool. Whatever feels good. You know, some people are like, I don't know if I want to chant this thing if I don't know, you know, what it means. That's okay. That's perfectly reasonable. So, whatever feels good to you, let's do it. Hopefully, I guess a few people didn't get chant books. If you don't have one, you can just listen. We may have run out. So the Metta Sutra is in the Saturday service. I'm not sure the page number. I should have looked this up. 3.4 in your chant books. You know, in cultures all over the world, as far as we know, people have used their voices together, pitched and rhythmic. It's one of the most tremendous losses that the United States has that people don't sing together, I think. But we're going to do it, so we didn't lose anything. We're here. So I'll chant the title, and then we can come in together. Metta Sutra. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, the medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease.
Let none despise another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Oh, I think I'll offer a dedication of merit. That seems nice. May all the benefit of this recitation be dedicated to the liberation of all beings from suffering in all directions and throughout space and time. So, I'm not going to spend any time unpacking that piece of literature. It's a good one, though. Look it up. You can go read it, take some time with it. Agree, disagree. You have the liberative capacity. So, what I want to do, though, is what we call meta practice, or sometimes called loving kindness practice, or universal friendliness practice. So this is a meditation practice. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about how to do it because many people here are familiar. Those of you who are unfamiliar, I'll be guiding us through it, so I think you'll be able to follow along. I want to say a couple things. The basic format is that you think about people and you direct kind thoughts towards them. That's basically what we do. We think about various people. I would say the way I will teach this now is rather than thinking that you're generating love or generating friendliness, I will think about you are putting words and images into your consciousness and being sensitive to what your emotional reaction is. So the main power of this will be your mindfulness of the emotional states that arise. So you may feel like, oh, I feel a really nice sense of love about this. Or you may feel like, oh, I feel sad because whatever. There could be many reasons. You might feel, I feel very angry because I don't love that person that you're talking about. And I'm just going to say the opportunity here is to just be like, I can be here for how I feel. I can be here for how I feel. So I invite you to find a posture that's conducive to meditation. We'll be sitting here for about 15 minutes. Metta practice is traditionally practiced with eyes closed, as opposed to Zazen. Zazen is just total engagement with everything that's here, so the eyes are open. But metta practice, we're cultivating an internal awareness and internal images, so it helps to have the eyes closed. So let's just settle, if you can, the awareness in the body. Noticing the whole of it. And then allowing awareness to sink in a more focused way into the breathing in the lower abdomen. And And so I invite you to just focus attention on yourself. The whole range of whatever you think comprises the self, perhaps body, feelings, thoughts, maybe. Really a matter of perspective. And then let's just begin to direct these kind phrases towards ourselves. Just being sensitive to however we feel as this occurs. It may help to put the phrases as you exhale. And you can inhale and exhale. May I be happy. Inhale, and as we exhale, may I be healthy. Inhale, and as we exhale, may I be safe. And then as we exhale, may I be at peace. And may I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be safe. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be safe. May I be at peace. And see if you can just continue these phrases in your own mind with your own breath. And if you can't remember the phrases or you get lost, just come back to may I be happy. That's pretty good right there. Let's just let the phrases go. Allow attention to rest in the body and affect or emotion or feeling that's here right now. There's no need to fix, judge, or control. No need to name, but if you want to name, that's okay. Let's begin to think of someone that we really care about. Someone, hopefully, that we love pretty unequivocally. So for some people, it's hard to think of someone. Some people do. Just someone that you really love and care about that you don't have intensely complicated feelings about. And just begin to visualize this person in front of you. Perhaps on a little green hill with a blue sky behind them. And begin to direct these loving phrases towards them. May I be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. Just continue with these phrases, or if you can't remember them or get lost, just stay with "may you be happy." Let's just let these phrases go. Allow awareness to rest down in the body, feeling tone or emotion or affect. Whatever's here. Now I invite you to bring to mind someone who you can think of, but who you don't really know and don't really have a lot of feelings about. This is often someone like a person that you work with that you see fairly rarely, or a person that you see on the bus going to work. A person who you see checking groceries at a store where you have the privilege and capacity to get food very easily. If you have sufficient income. Just drawing to mind somebody about whom you don't have a lot of feelings. And then picture this person on this little green hill, blue sky behind them. Begin to direct these kind and loving phrases towards them. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. Just let these phrases continue in the mind, perhaps saying each one as you exhale, visualizing this person towards whom you don't have a lot of feelings. Let's let these phrases go. Just rest in the breath and the body, feeling. And traditionally, the fourth person we visualize is someone towards whom we have aversion or negative feelings. And I very strongly encourage you, unless you're very experienced in this practice, to choose someone who is mildly problematic for you. So someone you have to deal with at work who's kind of irritating or something like that. I really don't recommend you choose someone towards whom you have an overwhelming degree of intense negative emotion. But if you've done a lot of metta practice, you probably have some awareness of what is your growing edge. And remember here, you don't have to have a particular kind of feeling about this person. We're just going to say these phrases and observe how we feel about that and really be sensitive to ourselves. Well, just picture someone towards whom you have some aversion, probably someone towards whom it's fairly mild. And begin to direct these phrases towards the person. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. See if you can just keep these phrases going. Just know how you feel. Just let these phrases go. How is the body? How is the feeling? I invite you to visualize yourself, the beloved person, the person towards whom you don't have many feelings, and the person towards whom you have aversion, all standing together on that little green hill with a blue sky behind them. And just begin to direct these phrases towards them. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you be at peace. Just keep these phrases going if you can, allowing your awareness to include the visualization and the truth of how you are in your heart. Just keep all this going if you can while I invite you to continue to expand the visualization. So with all these people on this hill together, then include all the people in this room. The people towards whom you direct these phrases. And let this visualization expand to sweep out across the cities we dwell in, to all the people, across the surface of the lake and down in the water where the fish dwell, and up in the trees where the birds are, directing loving thoughts to the birds and the fish, out across the surface of the earth and into the sky and down into the ground, all the plants, people of all different types, all the way around the entire planet, encompassing people of so many different cultures and experiences, people who are overjoyed at this very moment, and people who are in profound despair, people who are giving hugs and people who are weeping, people who are wealthy and people who are poor. Sending loving thoughts to all of them. You can let go of the phrases and the visualization. Notice just the breath, condition of your heart. Allow the eyes to open. And just adjust your posture, however it would be good to release this period of meditation. Gonna guess that was a lot of unique experiences. And whatever it was, it's okay. You can learn that whatever kind of feelings come up, we can be like, this is a feeling. I can be here with it. That's very powerful. That's a very empowered position to live from. And then, with mindfulness there, we say, what do I want to do? Where's my liberative opportunity? It is the most militant, most radical intervention anyone can make to not only speak of love, but to engage in the practice of love. For any time we are doing the work of love, we are doing the work of ending domination. And we can flip that back and go, oh, if I'm trying to dominate this situation or control it, is that really going to help? Is that really going to help? Same thing goes with your feelings. Don't dominate them. They just need to be seen. So I do believe it is possible to act for the liberation of all with love. And we can cultivate this capacity together. Thank you. So we have a few minutes for people to lift up their voices. I just want to say something. So I mentioned the hearings with Dr. Ford, and I'm just going to invite, I'm actually going to make a request that if you're a man, you don't say anything about that. It's very easy to not understand what is traumatic and painful for people who are from a class who suffers from oppression. So that's my request to you. And if you feel like, oh, I really need to say something, I'll be upstairs and come talk to me. Or if you don't have time, send me an email. So I'm not trying to muzzle people. I'm trying to help everyone feel safe and supported. So other thoughts, questions, or inquiries, I welcome. Or just reflections on that.
I have a little problem with the safety aspect of this, because you started out talking about Frederick Douglass and how kind of want to boil the water. So what does safety mean? And I think if I expand this to all creatures, well, it's a dog-eat-dog world. So I know nothing is safe. I mean, I know that at a gut level, nothing is safe. Or are we defining safe in a different way? Because I balk every time that part of the meditation. Like, safety? Are you serious? What is that? What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's interesting in that meta practice, in a certain sense, is a practice of cultivating attachment, which is kind of odd given our tradition, right? We're called, I want you to be happy. That's an attachment. I want you to be safe. So the thing is, to have a healthy heart, we kind of need that capacity to really care about ourselves and other people. And the need for the inclination of mammals, of organisms, to want to be safe is very profound. So it's just a way of kind of respecting that. Ultimately, of course, we're all going to die. You know what I mean? And we're all going to suffer. So that's another side of something that we acknowledge extensively in this tradition. But at the same time, just understanding that people, when they feel unsafe, it's hard for them to feel their liberative capacity, and they suffer a lot, and we care about them. Does that make sense at all?
It does. I'm going to work with that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Bernie, please project.
I will project.
Thank you.
And make you dad. Sorry. If I may just respond to what lady just said, I have the same reaction to the exercise, but mentally I alter the phrasing just slightly. May you feel safe, even if you are not actually safe, because we're never going to know what that looks like, right? We're ultimately going to suffer, but it's the feeling.
Yeah, I think that's just cool. So you're saying, you just, when you're saying this, you say, may you feel safe. And I think that's good. But I will, I'm just kind of improvising here, but if we want people to feel safe, we may change the way we do culture so people have more safety. If we have that, if we go, I want people to be safe, we may do stuff differently. And I think that's good. That's good.
So, in a way, you're saying this is a call for action. I mean, which thought should be.
Yeah.
And what's the point of thought? It's not a call for action. It's just more echoes.
Yeah.
So, early in the talk, you made comments that this is how I understood. You said there are different beliefs in Buddhism that bring about different thought patterns. One of them was the interdependence thought, and I'm trying to remember the other one that you were comparing it to.
Autonomy.
Autonomy, yes, thank you, autonomy. So you brought up these two. And what I took from it, though, was they're useful thoughts to address whatever's happening inside of you, and whichever one seems to balance out the most or ring most true at the moment is the one that should be thought of. I just wanted to check my understanding of that because it seems like something that I could grab on and like, oh, I should only think about interdependence right now. I should only think about autonomy.
Yeah, well, so great. I would just say all thoughts are just, you know, they're things that are liberative or not. And we don't really know, but we try. And Buddhist teachings provide some thoughts. And so they're just medicines for whether they'll be liberative or not. So you get to kind of discern. Would this be a good time to focus on interdependence? Would this be a good time to hold them both? Ultimately, if you can hold them both, that's good. But sometimes you have to go, oh, I just got to hone in on, like, I can do something, because you feel so crushed down. Or, nothing really matters. It's all just a big wash of chaos. Just turn on the news. It's too much. I can't deal. Right? Medicine. Ah. Well, I think we should wrap up. I am just really grateful to have been here with you all. I wish I had a little more time to talk. But if you want to talk to me, just come up there. And otherwise, talk amongst yourselves.